Like, I know that love is the most powerful force in the universe, and I was just shown the way it's literally like a diamond. Like, it's so strong, it's so solid, and when we can like lead with that love, it's just like there's nothing else that can even remotely compare. It just, it blasts and it completely transforms the space.
The rose is an ancient symbol rooted across time and cultures. It initiates us into the feminine mysteries, calls to us during times of change and transformation, and teaches us how to value the softness in our strength. It offers, through beauty and generosity, rose petals of wisdom. It gifts us with the sweetness of an enticing scent, so we may remember our own. It shows us the power of our boundaries, the sacredness of our sovereignty, the beauty of our way. It walks with us, talks with us, whispers in the night, and answers our prayers. It finds its way to us when we are open and ready, and is a doorway into the forgotten scripts. The rose is more than a flower. It is a lineage of love, a frequency we attune to, return to, and remember. The rose is the full spectrum, worthy and whole, teaching us women it's safe to be in our fullest expression. Many refer to the rose as the queen of flowers. It's said the rose holds the highest frequency of them all. We may never fully know and understand the depth of the teachings of the rose, the feminine wisdom our hearts yearn to remember. We make peace with the knowing, trusting there is always another petal, another layer to reveal, which arrives at the perfect time. Rachel Rosito is a keeper of the rose lineage and carries the sweet nectar of rose medicine in her being. Her last name, Rosito, literally means little rose in Italian. Over the last 15 years, she's dedicated herself to studying the temple arts, earth-based feminine wisdom, Eastern spiritual philosophy and practice, energy healing, and more. She helps women reconnect with their intuitive wisdom, creativity, beauty, and power. Her devotion is serving to help birth a time when women feel nurtured, celebrated, and safe to live with their hearts open, fully blossoming in their gifts. Rachel shows us the beauty we find from softening as a woman. To walk a Venusian path of love, a woman walks with a rose and a sword. The sword represents her bravery and courage, unapologetically cutting off and rejecting everything that's not worthy of her. With her sword, she fiercely channels beauty, femininity, and sensuality. She uses her thorns, her fierce discernment, to artfully test who is worthy of her love, who will be granted entrance to her sacred rose garden, who she can trust with the softness of her petals. Yielding the sword is yielding the solar plexus, the Grail King, our inner Arthur. She takes back her abilities as a healer, medicine woman, and lover, setting her boundaries and shields in place, surrounding her crystal castle with the moat only those holding the sword of Excalibur can cross. She replenishes her imagination fields with worlds and landscapes of her own. She tends to her own inner garden, turning the soil, watering the seeds with her focus and attention, blooming new worlds through her visions. She lives by truth, and so truth reveals itself to her. She sticks the sword of truth into the earth, activating the dragon lines in eternal love. Next to the sword, the word, lays the rose of the divine feminine heart. With the thorn and the sword, she takes the lead with the lightness of step, heart, and soul. Sword of truth in hand, anchored in the highest of love, shielding in place, she is free to reveal her deepest radiance, her most sensual softness, her tender heart in service to divine love in this world. In this episode, we talk about the meaning of discipline and devotion as it relates to the feminine path, energy medicine, the symbol of the rose, the medicine of the thorn, how to wield our sword in truth and in love, in the power of love and appreciation. And finally, what it means to become a chalice. To connect with Rachel and her upcoming program, Becoming the Chalice, visit Rachel Rosito, RossitoR.com, or at Rachel Rosito on Instagram. To connect with me, Jacqueline Norton, you can connect with me on Instagram at Jacqueline Norton or at MyRubyRay.com. Enjoy this episode and the rose medicine afoot. Thank you so much for being here. Please subscribe, share, or leave a review if you enjoyed this episode. We continue now along the Ruby Ray. Rachel, welcome to Ruby Ray.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
It's so nice being here with you today, and today, I would really like to focus on talking about how we can take better care of our internal world, our internal gardens, our internal landscapes. And you talk about becoming the chalice and like becoming this chalice of love and living in devotion to just something bigger than ourselves. And yet in our day, we can get so pulled in all of these different directions. We can think we need to look at everything outside of ourselves for direction and like forget that we have this storehouse of wisdom and of love and of knowledge within that we can always turn to. I know your path has brought you into the teachings of the rose and the rose mysteries and really in service to love. And so I would love in this time with you today and hopefully the, you know, the most value that we could bring in our time together is to share these different rituals or practices or real tangible ways that you in your own lived experience have really found ways to connect with this river of love within yourself.
So well said. Thank you. This conversation and this invitation. Yeah, I think as women, we're always learning how to show up with an open heart and with a healthy body and with a clear mind. And like you said so beautifully, the world is constantly pulling us outside of ourselves. And whether it be work, family, social media, our drive, our ambitions, our deep longing to be of service and to make this world more beautiful takes a lot of energy and takes a lot of external energy that is so beautiful. But if we don't nourish, like you said, and tap into that well within, we easily become drained and depleted and exhausted and like dry. You know, like the well is dry, I have nothing more that I can give. And then we start kind of like, you know, drinking coffee and doing things that like, not that coffee's bad, I love coffee, but it's not pulling from real energy. It's kind of like patching the hole rather than really looking at the foundation of what's going on. So I have found with my clients and the women that I've served over the years that creating a sacred morning practice can be such a beautiful way to anchor the day, to really ground your own energy and to fill yourself first before, you know, starting your day and engaging and being in dynamic with other people. So there's many ways that can look. I personally have been a meditator for over 15 years and have found that that moment of silence and listening and receptivity and attunement has really helped serve my path and the clarity and from where I move from. But there's so many different ways. I mean, I really love building an altar. I find having a very simple altar to be a wonderful way to have a physical location in which you can bring yourself to every morning. And this really started for me when I was a little girl. I used to build little altars in nature. And then, you know, as I got older and a teenager, I would like have little altars in my room. And then when I was living in New York after college, I remember really devoting myself to a 40-day practice where I said every day for 40 days, I'm going to sit and I'm going to do this particular practice called Sudarshan Kriya. And I remember turning like a milk crate over and putting a candle and a rose and just very, very simple. And I sat there every day. And there was something about the discipline and the consistency and the real devotion that changed something deep within my alchemical being. And it's interesting because it's like, you know, we're talking about the feminine, right? And so the nature of the feminine is about flow. It's about, you know, intuition. It's about feeling. It's about, you know, moving with what is arising in the moment. So, you know, when I talk about discipline or meditation or things that are very structured, it's like, how do we as feminine beings work with the power of discipline, you know, like discipline and devotion is being two sides of the same coin, in order to feel that inner union, you know, and that inner union is really that complementary of the structure and the form with the listening and the intuition, the flowing with what is. So when you have a morning practice and you have some simple structure, like I wake up and before I start my day, I keep my phone off and I sit down at my altar and maybe it's 10 minutes. I set the alarm and for 10 minutes I breathe or I, you know, drink tea or I journal or whatever it is that you feel is the way that helps yourself to start to tune into that inner garden. It allows for me, insights and downloads and clarity from like the most mundane, like really prioritizing my day, to the most esoteric of like, how can I be a more loving being? Please show me how I can approach this dynamic or this relationship with more presence, more love, more mindfulness, more patience. And I find that, that space that we sit in the morning practice is a way of really connecting with the sacred. And the sacred is something that we all know, right? The sacred is everywhere. You walk outside in nature and it's like you can just feel the magic and the mystery of this earth and this planet. And, you know, just nature as its form is so sacred. And yet as a being, as a woman, we forget to tend to our hearts, to tend to our wombs, to tend to that relationship with the sacred. And the altar is so beautiful because it's like this, I like to think of it as like a prismatic effect. Like we put on the altar what we value, you know, so it could be maybe working with a specific deity like Lakshmi or Saraswati or maybe dragon medicine or maybe rose medicine or Shiva or a sprout, like a seed, a seedling, you know, whatever it is that we are cultivating within and we're moving towards, we place on the altar. And then when we sit at our altar in the morning, we're reabsorbing that information back into our bodies, helping us to remember and helping us to cultivate a deeper relationship. So I'll just pause there for a moment, but there's a lot of power in the sacred morning practice.
Yeah. Well, and for the feminine to really be able to flow, it's like that structure, having that container that's like holding us is so vital. And you mentioned about discipline and devotion being two sides of the same coin. What does discipline mean to you?
I often think about, when I think about discipline, I think about focus. It's like really focusing, harnessing your energy in the direction of something that is very meaningful to you. And there's a quality in discipline that is like unwavering, you know, which is a form of love. It's not like discipline, like I got to do this or you better do this or this thing that causes contraction. It's more like discipline gives us freedom. And so discipline for me is like making a commitment to something that is very valuable to you and showing up no matter what. And this is a practice of the mind, right? Because the nature too is like, oh, I don't feel like it today. Oh, I don't, it's, you know, it's like, I don't want to, or we can get very, very loose. And not that we shouldn't be loose, but it's like knowing when to be loose and when to let the feminine fluids and the sacred waters to flow in our being. And when is it time to really anchor in the energy of like the mountain and the spine or the jed, you know, the center column. And so the discipline, I think, really strengthens spiritual practice, it strengthens the mind, it strengthens the spirit. You have to know where it comes from, because when discipline comes from, like, I'm not good enough, and so I need to do this to be better, or coming from, I love so deeply, I love my body, so I'm going to practice yoga every day, you know, or 3 days a week, or whatever it is. And there's power in showing up to oneself and actually, like, allowing the commitment to override the feeling. Because I think sometimes as women, we have such strong emotions that they can take over our lives. And sometimes that's okay. And I have found that it can be very beautiful to have a relationship with the emotions where we create safe spaces to really feel fully. And that could be working with a coach. It could be in a dance container. It could be at the altar in the early morning light, where you get to just dissolve and cry and feel, and, you know, and then the rest of the day, there's like a more pristine energy, because it's like you've touched that, you've allowed for that. And so, yeah, the emotional field can be stronger. Yeah, devotion. Devotion is like, is just it. I think it encompasses the discipline, and it also is like a lifelong journey of just continuing to move towards something. You know, like, I sat in a ceremony last night, and it was just this incredible communion with the divine. And it was like all the ways we get to devote, you know, our time, our energy, our song, our dance, when we create beautiful space, we nourish food. It's like all of that is poured into creating a deeper union and communion with the divine. And so it feels like it's just like woven into all things in all ways.
Yeah. And when you talk about, like, the constant attunement or reattuning back, right? Like, we might come to our altar in the morning and, like, feeling just that pure life force or love, or, you know, untarnished by the day, just we're able to access it because we're more open, we're more receptive. And then the day goes on, and I feel like that's where, like, the deeper levels of mastery or of self-awareness come in, because we have to catch where we're being pulled off and carrying energy that isn't ours to carry, or we have, like, emotional residue in our field or whatever it is. And so, do you have, like, a practice or ways that you come back to yourself in that, like, midday funk, need to come back and connect back, like, source myself from within again and tend to myself from that rich inner landscape within us?
Totally. And I love that you use the word mastery, because it is, it's almost like the morning practice for me has become like my favorite part of the day. You know, it's just so delicious. It can be hard at first to get on that track, especially when you're traveling and you're moving and you've got a lot of things going on, or you're a lot of work, and it's like the last thing you want to do is wake up and sit. But then when you start to see how much it feeds you, then it's like, I can't imagine leaving my room without having a moment to, you know, drink tea or to sit at the altar and connect. But as the day goes on, you know, even though when you fill in the beginning, I think it helps the rest of the day. It's like a domino effect, and the quality and, like, the essence of the day is infused with that love and that energy. It definitely helps, but we still are human and have, you know, challenging moments and things that we absorb, like you said. And I find a few things. I find water to be an instant reset. So that could be as simple as washing your hands. It could be as simple as taking a break and literally drinking like 3 glasses of water and just like really connecting with the frequency of water and purification and nourishment. Sometimes when I hold a glass of water, I'll like visualize the most pristine stream, you know, I'll be like, oh, this reminds me of this fountain, and just like drink that part of the world or drink that energy of a place in the world or a particular waterfall that you feel resonant with, charging the water, because the water is so receptive and it changes form, as we know, you know, by the energy and the intention and the words and the thought forms that we put into it, making it holy water, you know, and drinking it, and or taking a shower. You know, I work from home, and sometimes I'll take a shower in the middle of the day after a long morning of clients, and just the water helps to reset my field and to clean and to clear. And, or if you live near the ocean or you live near a river and you can just like take a quick dip, it's like such an instant energy clear and reset. So that's one. The other thing is music. I find that listening to music just transforms the state of the mind. And if that's like you work in an office and you want to go for a walk around the block and you put on a playlist that you love and you just absorb yourself into the music, that can be just such a wonderful way to feel that joy again in your heart, or to go through maybe some emotion. It could be a crazy song and you're just like, ah, and you get to just like or dance in your room and just shake that energy off, because it has to move through the body. You know, there's things that we can do just in the mind, and I'll share that third one in a moment. But, you know, shaking the body, moving the body, really just like stirring it, feeling it, and releasing it can help us return to that center. And the other thing that I work a lot with is energy medicine. I had my master's degree in energy medicine and have learned a lot about the power of the mind and how we can direct energy and, you know, creating certain layers of shields and energetic protection, so that when you are going out in the world and engaging with people and absorbing things, that those things don't really absorb into your field. You know, working with clients, having my own energy setup that I do that keeps their energy there and my energy here. And that's how I can be of service to them. Or if you're walking through the world and you're on the train or you're grocery shopping, having those that kind of like, you know, you could think of like a golden egg of protection or something that helps you to really feel the distinction between your energy and what is not your energy. And having that mindfulness, I think, can help feeling less heavy and drained by the end of the day.
Totally. Yeah. Ooh, those are so good. And I love what you said about the water and connecting it to like a living water source wherever in the world, and just how simple that is. So what was your path like to come into where you are now and to be bringing forth the different life ways that you're now sharing? Was this like a straight and narrow path, or how did you find it?
Nothing is straight and narrow, for sure. It's these circles and spirals and going down, going down into the depths. I love that analogy of like this journey that we take to go into the underworld, you know, and then the treasures that we find and the journey that we take to come back up and to offer those gems and those treasures to be an offering for the community and for, you know, others. So I definitely have that in my past. I grew up very, very grateful to have two parents who are very spiritual, and grew up in the Vedic lineage and tradition. Both my parents had gurus from India who were incredibly, impeccably beautiful, wise beings, teaching yoga, which is like the mystic sect of Hinduism, which is very much about experience and very much about meditation and yoga and mantra and devotional music and bhakti and ways in which we commune with the divine through experiential knowing. And so I grew up, you know, my parents are very alternative. You know, we were macrobiotic, and I was born at home to whale sounds. And, you know, my mother is a beautiful energy healer. My dad is a yoga teacher. He's also a mediator, but also a kirtan musician. And so I grew up with a lot of love and a lot of, spiritual wisdom. And then, of course, being a wild teenager, I decided to push all of that away and to go on my own journey and my own descent into the caverns of my pain, and, you know, what it's like to grow up and to try and understand what it means to be a woman, and felt so lost in my purpose and in my identity and what my place is on this planet, and, you know, had a good dose of time with abusing substances and unhealthy relationships and, you know, depression and anxiety and all of these things that really just put me in a place where I just felt like I didn't even want to be here anymore. And, you know, was just very self-abusive. And then it was through meditation. It was through learning about yoga and kind of reclaiming these parts of myself. I also did a training in holistic health medicine, which helped me learn how to take care of my body and about nutrition and about how, you know, when we're healing ourselves, it's not only just on one level, but it's like we're healing the emotions and we're healing the mind and the spirit and the body. And that holistic approach was really, really important. Starting to study plant medicine and to understand different dimensions of what it means to be a spirit in a human body. And it kind of spiraled from there. I had some really beautiful teachers that came in and taught me about the power of the Divine Mother and the power of love and the power of compassion and really the beauty of what happens when we live from that place of love and we're able to alchemize those feelings of fear and doubt and pain and, you know, like the heavier parts of ourselves and transmuting it into love. And so I continue to be a student of the rose, to be a daughter of the Great Mother, and to, yeah, continue to be an ambassador for this planet and the importance of nurturement and caring for ourselves and others and working with the forces of nature rather than like thinking we can control them. And really learning what it means to be a woman and to be a strong woman. And that, you know, right now in society, we have a lot of examples of the masculine. And even, I don't even like to talk about masculine, feminine as women and men, because they're just energies. And in a feminine, female body, we can have masculine and feminine and, you know, same with a man. But really helping to resurrect that feminine principle. And that principle being one in which, like, how can we lead, but lead with softness and to lead with care and to lead with that inner strength and where we're not dominating others, but we are really being of service of what is in harmony with the all. And I'm always learning and always growing and always studying and always a student of the Path of the Rose.
Mm. And you've recently relocated. So what has the medicine of the landscape, the new landscape that you're in now, because that brings an influx of energies and everything. So what has that taught you?
Well, it's so interesting because I lived in California for 10 years and California, at least in my perspective, is such a feminine place. It's like sweet and gentle and luscious and, you know, has just this like, I don't know, just this very like sweet mother quality. And New Mexico, which is where I am now, has a very different terrain. You know, it's very high in elevation, very open skies, big mountains, lots of rock, you know, so it has a more masculine terrain. And for my being, it feels so good to be here. I'm just loving this spaciousness. I find that my meditations are really deep. I find that my mind is very clear and my capacity to see into many things is like much more open. And it feels really grounding. I feel like since I've been here, just my body feels really good. My home feels really good. My work, music, creativity just feels like it has a very solid base. And I find that for me, that just helps all the creativity to open and to blossom. So I've only been here a couple months, so there's a lot to learn. But I'm seeing that New Mexico has many layers and many beautiful humans, healers and artists and creatives and people who are just very simple and solid and yeah, have a real like soul there. So I'm loving it. I've just been blessed with the people that I've met. I'm just like, wow. Even last night I met new friends and I'm like, like it just makes me so happy to meet kindred spirits.
Yes. Oh, that's so amazing.
Because often people think of New Mexico. I mean, it is the high desert. So like it is the desert, but it's actually very green and very luscious. Like right now I am looking outside and the little leaves of the rose bushes are starting to grow and these little purple flowers outside of this window started blossoming and the greenery and it's just like everything is coming to life. It feels really good to come out of like winter and the snow and the stillness and really feel the spring, the elements and the seasons in a way that I didn't fully encounter.
That's so amazing. And to be able to experience herself through different locations is one of the biggest blessings of this life, you know, just to be able to see herself reflected back in all of these different ways and access different parts that we didn't you know, we couldn't really tap into in the same kind of way. So I love that. And I'm sure like your feminine just feels so like a massive exhale, like it can just lay back and relax with the structure of the rocks surrounding you. And
where are you located?
What is I'm in Seattle right now. And it is, well, this has been a big lesson in going back to like respecting the feminine and all of her seasons and all of her cycles and phases, because we as a society tend to really celebrate the easy and the light side of femininity, you know, the mother, the maiden, where things are light and bright and kind of that Californian like bliss vibes of just when everything is sunny and cheery, you know. But then it's like, how can we make peace with when she's a roaring storm or days of rain on end, or these like darker expressions where it's really not that fun being outside, right? Like it's cold. And I think we forget that sometimes, like the elements aren't always inviting and soft and like nurturing. Like sometimes they're fierce and it's uncomfortable and it's not ideal, right? Like quote unquote ideal. And so there's a big lesson in this, and like really to find the love and the appreciation in all of it, you know, like when it's pouring down rain and it's dreary and you're just like, ugh, and it's like, okay, what's the medicine in this, or how do I tend my own garden? So I'm able to just be at peace, I think, with it. So I'm not fighting against it. Mm. Yeah.
Beautiful.
So that's what's yeah,
so true that, you know, when we do weather those storms, they make us stronger and they help us to appreciate the blossoms and the sweetness when it comes, and just that capacity to not attach to anything, to live an eternal summer is fun and beautiful for some time, but then the system needs to compost, the body needs to really let go. And, you know, we eventually will let go and leave these bodies. And so when we practice death cycles, whether it be in a plant ceremony or, you know, in embracing loss when it comes or heartbreak when it comes, and really allowing yourself to feel fully and go in deeply and be annihilated or dissolve or whatever it is that's being asked of you, it's like when we can learn how to do that and do that again and again and again, and maybe gracefully one day again, it really fortifies the next cycle that we go through, the beauty of birth and the beauty of, you know, the fullness again.
And it doesn't always have to be graceful either, you know, like sometimes it's just raw and it's messy and it's like, that's okay too. We're not always beautiful flowers. And there's wisdom in that too, that in the fierce feminine and in that darkness, we think about death, how much life there is in death. You know, and in that fierce, like those darker, deeper aspects, it's not just like we're laying lifeless and dormant and dull. Like there's actually so much juice in those quote unquote death, you know, cycles too, where, and I say quote unquote because it sounds like death, it sounds like we're dying, but there's so much life in that.
It's beautiful. It's one of the things I love most about the symbol of the rose. You know, so often we say the rose, and it is the rose, but the rose has the thorns, and the thorns are sharp. And when the thorns cut, and they make you bleed. And there's a purpose of the thorns. They serve the rose. And so often when we see, when we go to the store and buy roses, they don't have their thorns. They've been dethorned. And a lot of the roses don't have their scent. They don't even smell like roses anymore. And that for me feels like a lot the symbol of the feminine right now. Like we've lost our wildness. We've lost our fierceness. We've lost our claws. You know, we've lost that thorn quality, or that sword, you know, that strong, yeah, symbol of discernment and cutting away and clearing and protection, and the complement or the polarity of that soft petaled rose. And then the scent, you know, we've lost that, the essence, which is not only just the beauty, the physical beauty of the rose, but actually the internal beauty of the scent that is, it's, I think, its deepest medicine in a lot of ways. So it's it's interesting to remember the full spectrum of the woman and the full spectrum of the human experience, and to not get too caught up in one being taking away the other, so that we leave just the one piece, because that one piece won't be what it is without.
Yeah, well, and we feel so much more alive when we have the whole two, and like what you're saying, the inner scent. And I feel like so much about what we're talking about right now is like coming back to that inner scent, you know, like cultivating that inner scent and getting familiar with what it is. My inner scent is different than yours, and like what that, the nuances of what they are, and like these practices, you know, we can say, oh, I sit at my altar, I do this, or I do this in the middle of the day, or whatever. And all they are just pathways back, they're doorways so that we can find our way back into that inner scent, our inner rose, even when it's pouring down rain outside, and that we always have ways to come back.
So beautiful. And I'm curious even what your relationship is with the thorn too, because it's like as we are rewilding and we are connecting with that fierce feminine, right, which is, we know, is important, there's also a quality of that energetic that can be reckless. That can destroy, and which is beautiful that it can destroy. But I've also seen that fierce feminine come out, like, you know, women just being like, yes, I just want to rage, and I just want to, and like that Kali. And it's like, it actually like does deep harm to those in their life, or, you know, to those in their wake. And so I'm always so curious, like, how does one really wield the sword in a responsible way? How does one not deny that part, you know, the shadow or the death or the, you know, the sharpness, but also how do we wield that responsibly, because it is such a power and because it's such a strong force? And yeah, I'm curious what you're
saying. I mean, I love that you brought this up so much. There's so many layers to this. You know, the first thing that came up when you said that about that destructive feminine is, to me, that, I mean, the feminine can be really destructive, right? Like the water, there, tsunamis can take out, and, you know, you get stuck in a riptide or any of these things. Like that water, you know, using that as a metaphor for the feminine, is a destructive force. It can be. And yet when you talk about, you know, that really like destructive feminine too, where it's like not in harmony, like it's not serving love, because you can be fierce and you can be angry and you can be enraged, you can be sad, you can like be in the full spectrum of your emotions, but still connected to love, like still connected to your heart, still rooted. That sword is still in the ground, you know, like you are still anchored in your deepest heart. And I feel like where the feminine can go off in that destructive, chaotic, just tearing stuff down and being like almost like that domesticated wild, where it's not our true wild, it's like a fabricated wild, I feel like that happens when we've lost our connection to our heart, you know, like where our sword is no longer anchored in truth, and truth is love. So if you're anchored in truth, you're anchored in love. And I feel like that is where we can come off balance, and like actually we're not even in our feminine anymore, we're taking on these like traits of the masculine, which isn't even the masculine, you know, it's not even the true masculine, it's like it's just toxicity that we've, you know, picked up on. So when it comes to the thorn, it's like our thorns, which are our boundaries, are to be respected and to be honored, you know, like our power. If we don't honor our power, then we will go and throw it up onto every person that we meet, and we'll project it out, and we might be, you know, argumentative or whatever it is, tense and uptight, because we're not honoring the power that we hold. And the thing about a thorn is that it's so small, but it's so fierce, you know, like I had a glass, like a cut in my thumb last week, and this reminded me of the thorn, because this tiny little shard of glass can create so much pain.
Yes. When I was in, I was doing a pilgrimage in Glastonbury, and my friend and I, these rose thorns, and we were like, putting little thorn acupuncture into different energy centers, and it was just really being with the power and the intensity of, you know, the thorn, and it's strong. And it's interesting too, because it's like, often we can also think of like softness, right, as being like sweet and soft and flowery and like kind of this like not unimportant, but this kind of pretty little thing, right, like a part. But like in those moments where the thorn is present and the energy is raging, it's like that's when the softness actually becomes the practice, because it's like in that subtle softening, in that subtle like allowing for that flower and that essence to be felt and remembered, then the sword is remembered and that force of love is remembered, and then the wild and the fierce and the, you know, the feminine that needs to come through that is strong can come, like you said so beautifully, from an anchored place of love and not create more destruction or more distrust in the feminine, which is, I think, why perhaps, don't quote me on this, but maybe why the patriarchy has become the patriarchy is because it was kind of swinging the pendulum from an expression of the feminine that was not rooted in love. And maybe the chaos and the intensity of that, they felt like, okay, well, we really need to put some things around this because it's powerful and it's causing maybe too much destruction, you know? So it's such a fine dance and such a fine line of how to wield our power.
How to wield it. Yeah. And, you know, as women, I think that we've forgotten that sacred duty that we have, like, especially in relation to the masculine, to say, I heard once, and I don't remember any specifics about it. The only thing I remember is that in this tribe in South America, what they said the role of the women was in this tribe was to say when enough is enough. So to say, you know, to the men, we've gotten enough wood for the fires, we have enough food, we have enough this, like, and that was the role of the feminine. And I feel like we as women have forgotten about that. Like, we've forgotten that sacred duty that we have to say, to be in our power, to, you know, be that thorn and to say enough is enough, because there's been none of that, you know, in the contraction of the feminine and us losing our voice, or not losing it, not using it, and, you know, the shrinking, there hasn't been that voice in society to say no more, or we've gone too far, or we don't need to continue extracting these resources from the earth, or whatever these things, you know, these resources are. And I feel like we can all feel that there hasn't been that voice to stand up for saying enough is enough. And so, you know, coming back to the thorn, like, how the thorn is what protects our sovereignty. And I know that it can be so hard and it can be so scary when you're like laying a boundary, or you're having to really like stand in your truth in a moment that might not be comfortable, but you know you're doing it because you're honoring yourself. And when you've lived through a lot of periods of self-betrayal or things like that, it can feel so foreign and so uncomfortable. But then it's like in that moment on that other side of, you know, that boundary is really where we bloom.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't know we were gonna go in this route, but I love that we did. Clearly the rose wanted us to talk about this.
Without the thorn. I said, you can't talk about the rose without the thorn. And yeah, the full spectrum of the human and the feminine experience. It's like there's so much shrouded in these mysteries, and we're all finding little bits and pieces to bring in together and see that fractal start to, yeah, shine a little brighter.
What do you think is a rose petal of wisdom or a thorn of wisdom? What is some lesson or wisdom that is really present and really alive for you right now?
Well, what's most alive for me, I sat in a ceremony last night with the grandmother, And it was strong. It was very strong. And it was this beautiful teaching around sitting with the force. And sitting with the force of creation when it is so intense and when you feel like you're just gonna like die like at any moment, you know? And it's like you can, and you can just like purge and just clear whatever needs to be cleared. And also one thing that I was taught was like the importance of like staying with the force if you can, like staying with the medicine, because the medicine is working on you and working on you. And even it kind of feels like you're riding a wave. It's like the intensity is so strong and you're like staying with it and staying with it. And you know, it's like it's so intense that there's like you have no choice but to surrender. You know, it's like it just envelops you completely, and all you can do is like vibrate with the medicine and the energy that is like in your being and in your bones. And it was so interesting to like feel just different teachings come up around the parts of myself that still need to be healed. I was feeling into motherhood, and I was like, do I have a resistance to motherhood? Do I have a fear of motherhood? Like, what is that? And I think part of it is just I'm very much on my path, and it's sometimes hard to be fully in your path and mother at the same time. Not that you can't do it, but I feel like I'm in a particular season of life where this is just what's being called and asked of me, and motherhood will come if it's meant to be, when it's meant to be. And also looking at like what are my blocks? What are my, you know, where are my fears? What is my resistance? You know, as someone who like is in devotion to the mother and who, you know, is a birth doula and cares for mothers and cares for women, and you know, feels so connected to that force. And so all this stuff was coming up around like being shown that so often the mother isn't appreciated. You know, I was being shown this grandmother, and she was like cooking all this food for her family, and she was doing all these things, and she wasn't appreciated. And I just like my heart sank, and I just was like feeling that pain of the mother, the grandmother, the feminine in the family unit that is not appreciated. And I was like, oh man, that must have been a past wound that I like got to like hold and to be in the pain and the intensity of, but also like realizing that we can only heal when love is present. So holding like deep pain and deep love at the same time, and then feeling the healing happening in that moment and current time. That's what I love about the medicine so much, is it's like a master teacher, and it's teaching me from the inside, and it's like teaching me not only just in my mind, but also like in present time and in the deep cells of my being, like vibrating and recreating a new pattern and a new like way of relating to myself. But all that being said, through that process, it was showing me the power of love, which I'm always learning about in different ways. But it was like showing me that like love must be present when we're healing. That true healing is just bringing love to the places in us. And if we can do that, the healing happens. And then I felt all this healing happen. And then I saw my mother, and I got this message that like the way you heal that part of you that is this unappreciated expression of the mother, you heal that by appreciating your mother. And I was like, oh my God. And I was getting all these downloads around how to love my mother more, how to appreciate her. I was like, found this online this website that sends flowers, like roses, every month. It's like a subscription. And I was like, I'm going to send my mother flowers every month for a year. I'm going to write her a letter. I'm going to listen to her and ask her, is there anything that needs to be said that you haven't said that I can hold space for? And just like actively be a loving presence for my mother in that process of healing. And then I was just shown like how like this just the power of love. Like I know that love is a powerful force in the universe. And I was just shown the way it's literally like a diamond. Like it's so strong. It's so solid. And when we can like lead with that love, it's just like it just there's nothing else that can even remotely compare. It blasts and it completely transforms the space. And just feeling that like strength, because love for me is like is softness and it's sweetness, and it's just that essence of like the most tender part of the rose. But love, I experience it more than anything as strength. Like when I'm in a vibration of love, I'm fucking like so strong. My spirit is strong. My body is strong. My field is strong. Everything is just like, So it's like truly the greatest protector, not only like is the thorns, yes, thank you for all of those, but also I find that love is even more like if I can step with that power of love, like the fierceness, the boundaries, all of that gets taken care of 10x.
You know? Oh my gosh. Yes. Oh, I love that. And it's like how the most complex issues that we make up in our mind about how big something is, and it's like the medicine for that is, or the antidote to that is usually like the smallest things right in our present reality, like our day-to-day basis, like love your mother more. And that problem that you think you have over here, love your mother more. That will take care of it. You know, like pet your dog, like, or go take a walk, like just appreciate, bring appreciation to where we are now. It's what smooths all, it's like it creates a pathway that we can go down. But it's like, and how many teachings are there out there about what we can do to transform this or da da da, but love isn't at the center of it. Like love isn't being remembered as this force that any wound we have, any pain we have, douse it in love. We get to just surround it and wrap it in love, and like that is enough.
Yes, I love what you said about appreciation. That was like what came all night, was just like appreciate what you have, appreciate who's in your life, love them well, like learn how to love people well and love things well. And I was just like, yes, of course. And it's powerful because it's powerful, but it's powerful because it's also hard, you know, because in an emotion. And this is why discipline is so important, because it's like learning how to feel what you're feeling, but not always allow that feeling to just take over completely. But it's like, wow, I can feel pain. I can feel frustration. I can feel like I want to chop this person's head off. And maybe there's some energy that I need to move within myself in a responsible way, but also like I can work with the power of my awareness to alchemize and to transmute and to actually lead with a different energy that is gentle, that is like compassion. You know, it's like, how do we like turn the tide, you know, when we just want to rage?
When we just want to rage.
Appropriate to being like, I'm going to choose to love right now because that's what I believe in and that's what I actually know will bring the highest healing.
Or how can we allow that deepest pain to bring us to our knees in the deepest appreciation?
Yes.
You know, how can we be like, damn, I hurt right now. Mm-hmm. Like I feels like a stab to the heart. Mm-hmm. And I can still find appreciation in this. And it's like, that is like a holy place to just like reside and just let live, just let that expression of life live for just even a sliver of a moment, you know? Mm. And it's hard and it's not comfortable, but that to me, that is like that true alchemy of being in the fire, holding both the pain and the love at the same time. You know, that is the merge, the masculine, the feminine, the rose petal, the thorn, that it's like where we can just be in that place of union. Mm. An acceptance of it.
That's the best. And when those tears, they just purify. It's like the pure tears of love and the tears of pain, and it's all in one.
And you don't know what it is.
Like, it's fun.
Beautiful. I love this conversation with you so much. Thank you for going on this ride with me.
Thank you. I really appreciate your work and what you bring and your wisdom and your medicine is so precious.
Thank you. Do I have time to ask you one question, or is it?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Last question. What does it mean to become the chalice?
Well, I'll never forget when I was living in New York on the wall of my first job in Soho, written on a brick wall. It said, becoming more and more of a perfect instrument to the divine, something along those lines of being an instrument. I often think of that in my own practice. It's like, how do I become an instrument? How do I tune my instrument? How do I purify and cleanse my instrument? How do I be a vessel for things to flow through? And yeah, the chalice is a symbol of the womb. It's a symbol of the form, the masculine, and also the sacred waters, the feminine, the blood, life force. It's holding that which is sacred in a way that is kind and caring and loving and responsible, and really for that energy, that medicine, the waters, to be a blessing, to be a gift, to be an offering for others. So yeah, the chalice is like learning how to cultivate the self in a way. It's like that, that symbol of like the bamboo, you know, like how to be a hollow bone, how to be empty. And so I'm always learning how to be empty so that I can be full, not I, so that spirit, so that sacred, so that nature can fill me and absorb into every particle of my being.
Beautiful. Yeah, I love that you brought, that's funny because I was thinking about that recently, like being an instrument for the divine, and like, what does that really mean to be an instrument, right, for spirit? And you think about an instrument, you think about a guitar, and it's hollow, and it emanates its own vibration, you know, it creates its own sound. And that's kind of what we're doing, going back to bringing this back around to cultivating our inner landscapes and cultivating our inner gardens. And we do that, we tend to those gardens so that the sound that we emit, the frequency that we emit, the expression that we give is pure.
Well said. It's a beautiful to explore. There's so many things that could be said about the chalice. And also I find that the deepest learning is through experience. So I would just invite anyone who is curious, like, what is the chalice? Like, how does a chalice show up in my life? How do I become a chalice? To place a chalice on your altar and put fresh water in it every day, and to sit with it and learn from it and be with it and tune into your womb and to the waters of your body, and to let that symbol and that imprint start to inform and teach you what you need to know about being a chalice.
And we'll leave it at that. Where can people connect with you?
Well, my website is rachelrosito.com. That's kind of where I have my main offerings, and you can learn more about my work and things like that. Also Instagram, I'm present there and post from time to time. I offer a mentorship for women every 6 months, and it's called The Chalice. And it's really about, yeah, exploring the mysteries of the rose and the teachings of Mary Magdalene and that lineage, and also learning more about the archetypes of the lover and the priestess and the healer. And really understanding that relationship between the rose and the thorn, and our softness and our strength, and where our feminine power lies as it relates to having an embodied experience and walking in truth, being an offering of love to others. So you can learn more about that on my website.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure talking to you.
Such a pleasure to talk to you as well. And it's so funny because this symbol of the ruby has come in so strong in the last few months, like in so many ways, I can't even begin to tell you. And so when you wrote me and I was like, Ruby Ray, whoa, it felt very aligned. So
what does, do you have your own relationship or interpretation of what the Ruby Ray means to you?
It does. And I will hold it internally at this moment, because it's a teacher and a teaching that is in the process of awakening in me. So I
cool.
agree with it. But I would actually love to have this conversation in a yes. little time.
Oh my gosh, come back on and we'll talk about it. I would love to dive into this because it's been, I mean, I knew nothing about it really when I just kind of got a vision, but I didn't know anything about what it means. And so similar to the rose or the chalice, it's just been opening through me, and it's pretty wild. It's pretty juicy. So we'll save that conversation for another day.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Much love. Bye. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Ruby Ray. I am your host, Jacqueline Norton, and I'll see you next time.